Well, good evening. Hi, thank you so much for waiting. My name is Deborah Margolis, and I'm the librarian who works with the Jewish Studies program here at Michigan State. It's nice to see everyone here. And, you know, welcome to the library and to this Kessler film event, this annual event with the Jewish Studies program that's named in honor of George and Esther Kessler. And I learned a little bit more about them tonight in that they were kind of, whenever new Israelis came to the community here, they would kind of be like parents to them and embrace them. So we just wanted to thank them for what they had done in the community here, and hopefully we're continuing their example. So what we're going to do tonight is that at the beginning, Yael Aronoff from the Jewish Studies program is going to introduce the film, and then we're going to hear from two professors, Yuval Ben-Zimon and Laura Apel, and I'm going to read their bios in a moment. Before I do that, though, I wanted to mention that here at the MSU Libraries, we're very fortunate to house an Israeli literature collection, the Holtzman Israeli Literature Collection, where you can find the novel on which tonight's film is based. And here it is in English. You can also find it in Hebrew. And you can find many of other of David Grossman's works, including works of children's literature. We have a new children's literature collection that focuses on diversity, cultural diversity, and other kinds of diversity in children's literature, and that's new in the past couple years. So hopefully you'll take a look at both of those collections, and I'm glad to help you if you need any guidance. So now I'll introduce our faculty members who we're so lucky to have hear them speak. So first we're going to hear from Yael Aronoff, and she's the director of the Jewish Studies program and the Michael and Elaine Serling and Friends chair of Israel Studies. And she's an associate professor at James Madison College. She's a recipient of the MSU Teacher Scholar Award, and her book, The Political Psychology of Israeli Prime Ministers, When Hardliners Opt for Peace, was published in May of 2014 by Cambridge University Press, and her current book project is The Dilemmas of Asymmetric Conflicts. True? Maybe it's changing a little as she does her research. Anyways, our next speaker after the film will be Yuval Ben-Zimon. He's an Israel Institute and Serling Visiting Israeli Scholar this year at MSU. And his main fields of research are Track 2 negotiations, the new war characteristics, and the representation of conflict in culture, mainly in films in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And he's currently working on several papers having to do with society and culture and art. Dr. Ben-Zimon teaches in the conflict resolution program at Tel Aviv University in the Lauder School of Government, Diplomacy, and Strategy in the Interdisciplinary Center at Herzliya. Okay, thanks. The third speaker, and we're really happy to have Laura Apel from the College of Education. She's Associate Professor of Teacher Education. She specializes in children and adolescent literature and in creative writing. And like Dr. Aronoff, she's also a recipient of an MSU Teacher Scholar Award. So we're really lucky to have them here tonight. Dr. Apel has published articles on historical children's literature, pedagogy of children's literature, international children's literature, among other topics. Her poetry has appeared in a number of literary journals and anthologies, and she's the author of three collections of her own poems, and her most recent published book is called Requiem Rwanda, published in 2015 by MSU Press, which is drawn from her work in Rwanda, where she uses writing to facilitate healing among survivors of the genocide. So thank you for listening to all those, to their bios, but I think we're in for a real treat and an adventure tonight with this film. And so I'm gonna ask Yael Aronoff to come up.
I know we're all eager to watch this film, so I'll try to keep it relatively short. I first wanted to thank Deborah Margolis, who actually brought my attention to this film because their children had enjoyed the book and everything else, so that was wonderful. And then a second reason we decided to show this film is that we thought it was likely we would be able to get David Grossman to come visit MSU this year, and indeed he's coming on March 22nd. We're going to have a faculty-student community member panel with him in the afternoon from 3 to 5, and then we're going to have an evening lecture with him in the Residential College for Arts and Humanities Theater at 7 o'clock. He's one of the three most renowned Israeli novelists. His book, Sea Under Love, was translated into 13 languages. He's won multiple international awards. He has multiple novels about extremely serious, subjects in terms of subjects dealing with the Holocaust, subjects dealing with war and peace issues in Israel. He was in the midst. I taught one of his books, I think it was To the End of the Land is the name in English, one of my honors options here at MSU, and where he talks about the fear parents and especially a mother have of their son dying while he's serving in the military and having people knock on their door and tell them that their child has passed away. And midway through the book, that actually happened to him while he was writing about it. And he lost his son in the 2006 Israeli war with Hezbollah. So he writes about extremely serious subjects. His latest book is also deals with issues of death. Tonight, we often show heavy films in Jewish studies, and tonight is a more much more light movie that deals with child fantasy. We're showing this because we wanted to whet your appetite a little bit for the visit from David Grossman on March 22nd, and we wanted to encourage you to read some of his things before he gets here so we can really have great discussions with him, and so it'll be even more meaningful to you when he comes. But you'll see in this movie, there's some autobiographical, perhaps, elements to it. In the movie, of course, it's a Dutch movie that's set mainly in the Netherlands and France. But the actual book is in Israel, and he takes a train ride not from the Netherlands to France, as the movie portrays in this Dutch movie, but in the book itself, he takes a train from Jerusalem, where he grew up and his family was living, to Haifa, where his in-laws, his mother's parents, were. And in the actual, life, his mother had an argument with his father, and she took the train to Haifa to be with her parents for a little while, and he kind of was devastated at this approximate age of this person in the film and takes this train right to Haifa. So there's some parallels to his personal life which are interesting. There are also kind of continuing themes that he has in a lot of his work that you might consider as you watch it, and we'll have more time to discuss afterwards. But a lot of his book seemed to really focus in one way or another on parent-child relationships. And in See Under Love, there is this sense of something that's being hidden from him about his parents' experience in the Holocaust. And it's almost like, in a way, a detective story of trying to find that out or trying to find out more about it. And in this story, he's trying to find out about his mother that died when he was an infant. So it's kind of a detective kind of theme of trying to find out things that are hidden from you. And he felt as a child that there were a lot of secrets that he didn't know about and was trying to find more information about. And as I said, in this more serious books, and To the End of the Land, it's also about kind of not from a child's perspective, but from a parent's perspective of the fear of losing a child. So there are kind of continuing themes. So, I mean, I think one thing to consider, too, is the universality of this Israeli author that takes place in Israel, and now you're putting in a completely different setting to kind of think about whether you truly feel like it's a universal story, whether it loses something in that process of translating it into a Dutch film. So there's lots of things that I'm sure the other speakers will point to other things that we could discuss afterwards, but let's see the film. It's really a delightful film, and we look forward to getting your reaction. Actions to it.
Okay. It suddenly feels so very formal and scary. It was very fun sitting back there.
Hi, everyone. I think we're going to have a discussion. I mean, we'll talk for a few minutes, but what we want is to have a discussion, not a formal lecture. Am I right at that?
You're very right.
Okay. So we planned everything. I must admit that the last time I read the book in Hebrew was quite a few years ago. So I want to say a few things about the film, and then I'll say also just some points about David Grossman that you might find interesting, who, by the way, those of you who recognize him saw him at the very last scene in the movie, in the wedding. He was sitting there at the very, very last scene here. You didn't see that? Okay. Next time you see the film, look for him. No, it's interesting. I think he liked the movie, otherwise he wouldn't participate in it. There's a whole genre of novels and films of kids growing up at this stage when they have to, they're in the transition when they're kids and they're becoming grown-ups, and they go through some kind of a journey. And there are sort of rules in these films, in these novels, of what this journey is. This journey usually starts with some kind of... these kids look for an answer. They go through a journey which usually takes more than 2 days, like here. It's usually longer because of, you know, teenagers not really finding their place in society. And usually these films have happy endings, like this film, in which they do find their they find answer to the questions that they're asking themselves, and they're less confused at the end of this journey, and they find their place in society. When Grossman wrote this book, and as we saw in this film, this was clearly in their minds of Grossman and the director of this film. This is what they're doing. I think they were very knowledgeable. They're taking the perspective of a kid growing up, and he's going to go through this journey in order to find out who he really is. This is the question he keeps on asking himself: who am I? And putting it into context, for those of you who don't know, a bar mitzvah in the Jewish life is exactly that, this transitional point where you go from being a kid to being an adult. It might be important that in Israel, and the book was originally written in Israel, this is not only, it has things that society expects from you. So you would have 13-year-old, what do you call 13-year-old? It's the problem how to call them. What are they, kids or they are... adolescence, exactly at this point where they would do things for their community. This is when they're in the seventh grade, and this is the time when the kids who are in the seventh grade will volunteer and collect money in order to do something for the community, something that, again, to symbolize this action. So it's not only something that has to do, in Israel, that has to do only with being Jewish, but also something that's Israeli. Well, of course, it's combined in Israel, but I think this is an aspect that Grossman, in writing this, had in mind. Even the act of going on the train, this is where it all started. In Israel, when the book was originally written, he was going on a train in Israel, not in Europe. Even that is something that I personally know. A lot of me growing up when I was 13, and I remember my friends, we would go for a day to our grandparents who were somewhere else. This would be the first time we were riding a bus or going on a train. Something that symbolizes this kind of maturity in a way. But while this is the context of the film, I think that we should ask ourselves who really goes through this journey. In a way, it's the kid, but I think that more so, or not more so, but as much as he goes through this journey, it's also his father who goes through this journey in order to understand who he really is and accepting the loss of his wife and being able to marry Gabi at the end. It's a journey of the grandparents. It's a journey of Gabi in a way. And all of this is in a way... surrounded by those of you who studied a bit of psychology, of a Freudian experience of the ego, the superego in the id, where I think Grossman had that in his mind writing it, and even in the way it was seen in this film, where Zohara in a way represents the id, full of passion and not sticking to the rules of society, and the father is a policeman, of course, the prototype of the superego, and in a way trying to figure out at the end how the ego is puts those of these two things together with Nono, who has to take all that into himself, the ego, the superego, who he really is, this is the big question, the generations of the grandparents, his parents, and who he will become. And again, he ends this journey in while being able to become a kind of an adult, an adolescent, stop being a kid and to figure out things for himself. But I think it's a story of how everybody there does that. And this is something that is, I think, typical for David Grossman, the writer, not necessarily, it's true for this movie, but overall, this is something that I think is true for almost all the novels of Grossman, where every character is in a way also a part of another character in the same story, in the same novel. It's not as if there are no good guys and bad guys. You saw it here. The bad guy is supposed to be the grandfather. You love him, although he's the bad guy. So it's very hard to place each one in a category of showing. It becomes very, everyone has good sides and bad sides. And everyone goes through this journey. You would think the main person who goes through this journey is the kid, but it's actually everyone. And so I think it's a story not only about the kid, but also about all of them. And the last remark I want to make about this is something about David Grossman's writing. I said that this phenomenon is true for what I understand in all his novels. But in an interesting way, David Grossman today is seen as probably the most important writer, Israeli writer, living with us today. For sure, one of the three most important writers, but I think he is the most important writer in Israel today. He writes stories for kids, for five-year-olds. He writes novels, as Yael mentioned in the beginning, about the Holocaust. He writes political things for adults. And then he has these books, like this book that was we saw the film, that is somewhere in between. And Israel audience were not sure how to accept it. Is this story that our teenager kids read, our 10-year-olds, our bar mitzvah kids, is this for grown-ups? And I think that, I don't know in numbers, but his most known books are these, the books that are, he has the Zigzag Kid, and he has what is the name of the second book? Someone to Run With. This is the Hebrew. I don't know how it's translated into English. These are the books that both teenagers and adults read. Everyone saw in them something for themselves. And in a way, I do think that it tells the story of grown-ups and of kids together. This is what I think is, in a way, fascinating in what he does. That's it for now. I don't know.
Good. Well, first, thanks for inviting me to be part of this. And Steve Weiland, I hold you personally responsible for this, I just want to say. So rather than being part of Jewish Studies, I'm here as, oh, wait, a Dutch woman. All those Dutch names up there were very familiar to me with my heritage. So what I hope we get a chance to talk about is I have only seen the film. I've read the first half
of the book in the last couple of days, but I haven't read the whole thing. And there are some striking differences that I hope we'll get to talk about a little bit about how they've made changes to kind of unify the themes, I think, and pull some themes forward in the film. So in the notes that I got ready, that you have said many of the things that I really was thinking about this as the classic coming-of-age story, the quest for identity. It gets framed so clearly in the film with those photographs at the beginning, and he just lays the whole thing out, right? So everybody's part of their mom and part of their dad. Now, the missing mom in the book doesn't even come in until a couple chapters in, but right here we get right from the outset. Everyone's part their mom and their dad, and I don't know who my mom is. So this becomes, of course, the quest. But I completely agree that it's everyone. Everyone is on a quest and for identity in the story. And I kept thinking about that notion of desire, about what Lola wants, Lola gets, and how Gabby wants, and what the father wants, and what the grandparents want, and what he wants so much to find out in this ongoing quest. And the way that it gets set up as the big question being that launches him, who am I? But then at the end, the question is what went wrong, you know? So really he's trying so hard to figure out in this sort of ruined history goes back to this house that's just in complete shambles. And it's representative of the relationship of his parents and the relationship between the grandparents and Zohara. And of course, the really interesting characters in the story are Zohara and Gabby. But the father ends up being just such a flat character in this film. In the book, I think he's not. I think he's more complicated. But here he really ends up being so emotionally shut down, both in his life after Zohara, but also in his life with Zohara. The most interesting moment is when he's in that chocolate soup thing with her. But after that, it seems to kind of go downhill. And one of the things I was really puzzled about in the book, I don't think that there are lightning bolts, right? There's something about kernels of wheat is the way it gets translated, that's the symbol that, I don't know if anyone else has read the book, but it's a kernel of wheat. So we've got the gun and the bullet that happened, you know, the symbol of the father and the symbol of the mother, and he's wearing. But the grandfather, Felix, has this wheat thing, and I thought it was really interesting in the film how that all gets tidied up into that lightning bolt that then is symbolic of Felix as a zigzag character, Zohara as a zigzag character, and then Nono as a zigzag character. So I don't know. Maybe you can tell me.
I don't remember how it was in the original book.
So, and it may just translate weirdly. Yeah. You know, the characters in some ways are. I can tell that there are translation things that happen, say with their names, they're renamed and so on. And the other thing I thought was really interesting from a children's lit, YA lit perspective was just this notion of trauma and how children come to terms with trauma and the ways that in this case it gets revealed to him and the importance of him finding it out for himself and how in the film there's that blurring between, and when I watched it, this is now the second time I watched it, but the first time, sometimes I was a little confused about whether we were looking at actual something happening in the moment, or if it was history, or if it was a dream, or if it was a fantasy. He gets titled, you know, the boy with the big imagination. And I thought of that as a really interesting way of dealing with childhood trauma or telling children about trauma. So, Yael, when you introduced this, you were talking about family secrets and how family, traumatic family secrets, family history sort of are occluded or revealed. And in the film, it seems to me, it's important that he gets just little bits so that it's actually his. Remember when he's going to get the shawl and Lola's shawl and then the grandfather says, oh no, he has to do this work himself. He has to. And we kind of see him have to run with her, be on the horse with her, fall off the horse, you know. So he's in it. They're sitting on the, you know, on the roof together. So that was another thing that for me seemed really interesting, in at least the way it gets translated into mm-hmm. film. So I think that's I'd love to hear what other people, like you were saying, I think this is more a conversation than a presentation. So maybe that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I question that I'm not sure you're able to answer, but I was fascinated by the idea that the novel was taken and translated into a Dutch movie. Why a Dutch movie? So that was something that was interesting to me. And as you were talking about the game that was created, I wondered whether there were, in some sense, it's also a story of the Netherlands. Sort of the very two characteristics of Holland. The conservatism, the conservative element, but and the very frivolous at the same time, and how they do play together or don't. But anyway, system.
I don't know anything about Holland, could you?
Well, I think you're sort of on to what I would like to sort of shift to, which is, what does it mean that it gets changed into? Why are they not going through? To me, it was upsetting when I read the book. I thought, why does the film put them in
Europe?
In Europe, in Holland and France. And so solidly there. It's not just a backdrop. It's real, you know, there they are in Nice and
I see the book as very Israeli. Very, things happening there. Those of you who read it, and those of you who know Hebrew and can read it in Hebrew, there's something so true Israeli in it that it was surprising to me that it was done there. And if it's taken from Israel to Holland, why keep the Jewish identity in it? I couldn't understand that. Why does it have to stick to the Jewish? Because the bar mitzvah thing, which as I said, I think is very important in Israel. It might. I don't think it plays an important role in this film. It could be another kind of a ceremony that he ruins at the beginning with the umbrella and then talks. I think it's not that important. But maybe. Since Grossman's not here, I'll flatter him even more. Maybe that's part of his of how great an author he is, that he captures something in the human psyche in how, especially I think he does a fabulous job when describing how kids think. I completely agree. His imagination, and I think that's true for how kids, they don't know exactly what is real, what is not. Some things he makes up for himself because of people not telling him what happens. Mm-hmm. Yael mentioned at the beginning his book See Under Love. In this book, nobody tells him about what happened in the Holocaust. All he knows is that there was the Nazi monster, so he thinks it's an actual monster, mm-hmm. and he's afraid of it, and he's sure that it's in the shelter of his house. That's why he won't open it, because he thinks it's an actual. He deals a lot with what people tell kids and what kids imagine or think because they're not the things that they're not told. So it's interesting. I don't know anything about Holland, but I think it's interesting that there are things that you can think that actually make sense for Holland in that.
We heard Netherlands, well, Holland language, we heard English, but there was also in between, and I don't know if it was just in my mind, but they were talking English very strangely, like they're talking in, what's the language of Holland? Dutch. Yeah. Okay. They were talking English, Dutch style. Mostly it was when the kid was with, not the mother, but...
With the grandparents.
The other lady.
Oh,
What's her name?
With Abby.
When they were like in the bed, and they were, I was basically reading the subtitles, and they were actually talking English, but very strange English. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but in quite a few times they did that. I don't know. I was reading it while they were talking, and that was in a cloak, whatever you call it, very bad English, but crazy.
You know, what's interesting about that is that because I read the first half of the book in English, which then is, of course, in translation, the language of the grandfather of Felix is very, Romanian or something, or at least so he speaks very non-standard English in the book. So there are all these, there are all these language layers that are going on, and I don't know how that shows up in the original.
No, I'll say something about this. Yeah.
Well, first of all, in response to the earlier question, I think it just speaks to the universalism of Grossman's art. I mean, it can be very, very Israeli, but it speaks to much broader universal issues and phenomena. But also, in answer to, I think it was Danny, I can't see, but yeah, it was Danny. I mean, they're Dutch actors speaking English.
No, but they were talking good English at times, but there was sometimes that it was the same actors talking strangely English, like it was Dutch. But I actually, when they were talking, I was just reading it in the subtitles.
I'm listening because I speak Dutch. Their Dutch was straight Dutch. And what's interesting to me, of course, is that there's some remarkable similarities in the cultures, even though there are obvious differences as well.
Between Israel and the
Europeans. Mm-hmm. My wife, who was Dutch, always said she felt very much at home in Israel. I think there are some affinities between cultures as well.
Because all Israelis are blonde and 2 meters high, or? Yeah.
Scratch the surface.
I also think on one hand, like, keeping the Jewish identity seems dissonant, which all of a sudden starts singing in Hebrew, it's kind of really stands out. Whether it was, when it was an Israeli setting, it wouldn't stand out. But on the other hand, I think perhaps, you know, from the Dutch history, it's a sign of respect that they wouldn't change it, since so many Jews in Holland died in the Holocaust, disproportionate actually to many other countries during the Holocaust. So I think probably the Dutch filmmakers may have found it disrespectful to you know, they want to kind of universalize the story, but still respect the heritage given the country's history, especially.
Well, it's so, given the myth of the history more than the history itself.
What do you mean?
Well, the fact that the Dutch were saved and whatever is more of a myth.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah, so
more
absolutely.
Died.
Yes, no, I agree.
Proportionally
with you.
Yeah. In the right. Netherlands, even though there, of course, were
right.
wonderful stories
right.
of hiding,
right.
And therefore, it almost would be, I think, disrespectful to yeah. then, you know, to then take that identity away,
right.
given that historical setting,
I agree.
You know. So.
Just before that, I want to say a word about the translation. I don't know if I'm putting too much into this, but the book in Hebrew is called "They're Zigzag Kids," which doesn't it's not proper Hebrew the way it is said. There are kids, they're zigzag kids. When it was translated, it was called the Zigzag Kid. Which makes it something like a bit of more individual about this kid. While again, I think that this is something that is not only about this kid, but about growing up altogether, and that's why I think in Hebrew it was chosen to be plural, not singular. Just I don't know when you mentioned the translation, I thought it was interesting. Yeah, sorry.
It sounds like this would make a great big
Not that I know of. There was, I don't think so. Another book of Grossman, the other one I mentioned, Someone to Run With, I don't remember how it was translated to English, the same, Someone to Run With, was a movie, an Israeli movie was made about 3 years ago. It was quite successful, you know, successful in Israel. The audience is not that big, but it did pretty well. But there was no, as far as I know, there was no attempt to do it with this book.
So I want to go back to that Zigzag Kids, Zigzag Kid, because that's so. The man with the golden ears of wheat, he would leave a fine ear of wheat made of gold at the scene of the crime, is the way it gets translated into English. So, So clearly that gets sort of refined or rethought based on the title for what the symbol is in here, because here it's at least it translates to a golden ear of wheat, which is very different.
Yeah.
And very different in connotations.
Connotations of what that means, yeah.
I like the discussion that you had about the role of fantasy in the film and how it interplays with the psychology that he's working with. And I think he does that. I've only read one of his other novels, The End of the Lane. He does that there also, where the woman is both imagining and also simultaneously living something and imagining something else, and something that she imagines comes to be, and something that comes to be she's imagining and developing, a very complex way of describing human understanding. And to me, that's very Israeli. The complexity of life, to try to understand something on one level, and then you just can't understand it on its surface. That's true, that's universal, but I also see it as Israeli. And so I really appreciated that. He did it with a lot of humor, whereas in some of the other work that I read, it's not as humorous. It's very painful, in fact. And yet it really, in a way, if you try to understand it literally, it's not really happening. His discovery of what his life was and his mother and so on isn't really happening. It's in this imagination, and yet it is really happening. So he's playing with both the going into the psychology of yourself, but also as a kind of a fantasy. So I like the way you talked about that, and it stimulates me to read some of his other work.
And I think at the same time, you could ask yourself, wouldn't it be better if the grown-ups would use a bit of more imagination, like the policemen? No, the police. I'm saying this in this film. If Yaakov would just, you know, use a bit of imagination, not only to think what the next crime will be, but you know, be a bit more open-minded. Maybe he would figure out some things that he needs his kid to do for him. It's not only what the kid does, but it's also what the adults do or do not do. Yeah.
Also, it was interesting that he Nono, I don't know what his name is in Hebrew.
It's Nono.
Is it also Nono?
Yeah.
It's interesting, he's called Nono in English. But anyhow, he won't be stopped. He's got to find out everything. And so even when they say, even though they bring him to the table and they're going to have dinner and they're going to celebrate everything that he's learned so far, he says, I need to know what else. And they said, maybe when you're later, his grandparents say the same thing that his father says. He said, no, I'm not going to wait. And he goes to the home where he was born, and that's where he finds the whole truth about his life. And that's where his father meets him, and everything comes to a conclusion there. So that was the bar mitzvah. That was really coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
And not being held back. I don't know, 13-year-old can't do that, of course, but it's a nice...
Well, at least this 13-year-old is maybe smarter than some of the adults, so I think that's part of it.
How was the film received in Israel?
films in general in Israel, Israeli audience don't tend to see films that are not in English or Hebrew. So European films don't do as good as American films. I didn't follow it. I can't tell you exactly the numbers that went to see it.
I'm interested in this notion of this is an Israeli author, a story about Israel, and that was farmed out. So what was the response in that regard?
The critics that I saw, I looked at it yesterday and today, were mostly favorable of it, saying that the novel was better than the film. By the way, I think it's true. I think the novel itself has more complexity. I think, for example, the policeman, you see more layers of the feelings.
And could I just ask, because as far as I am in the book, now maybe I'm going to be surprised, but it's the father and Gabby who sent him on this quest. Here, it pretends to be the father, but it's really Gabby who deceives everybody, yeah, who sets the whole thing up. But at least in the setup in the book, the father actually is a much more interesting character and seems to, they're both writing the letter and taking it away from each other.
I don't remember it. I'm sorry.
Well, read the book. I'll finish it tonight and let everyone know.
But it was received. I'm talking now about the critics. It was received as a good film. The novel's better. The film's okay, and it was received favorably. But it's not as if it was a bestseller. The cinemas were full of audience coming to see it. But that is true for a lot of Israelis go to Israeli films or to Hollywood films usually. Maybe. I know it's going now. I mean, it will be harder for European films to succeed in Israel. I think, by the way, I don't know, but I think it's true for most of the world. Am I wrong in that? If someone. Any other questions, comments?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.